Good evening and welcome to Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd, a weekly program where I'll be talking with some of the movers and shakers in the arts, literature, education, and human services, both here in the Matsu Valley of Alaska and beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Elizabeth Sierra, Assistant Professor of Human Services and the Behavioral Sciences and Program Coordinator of the Human Services at the University of Alaska Anchorage, the Matsu College campus here in lovely Palmer, Alaska. Today we have a special guest, Dr. Andre Gurianu. Welcome, Andre.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to just tell our listeners a bit about you before we get started. Andre Gurianu was born in 1979 in Bucharest, Romania. He immigrated to the United States in 1991 and settled in Queens, New York, after which he studied at Binghamton University, eventually earning a doctorate in English and creative writing. Before entering academia, for many years he worked as a newspaper reporter and columnist for the Press and Sun Bulletin in Binghamton, New York, as a cook and electrician's apprentice, and had a few stints in retail. He also ran a literary magazine and small press, and from 2009 to 2011 served as Broome County, New York's first poet laureate. He has received grants from the Broome County Arts Council and the Chenango County Council on the Arts and collaborated over the years on numerous arts projects with members of the community and fellow writers and artists. Currently, he's teaching in the expository writing program at New York University. Quite an impressive resume there, Andre.
I've done quite a bit over the years, tried my hand at just about everything, so it just goes, you know, with the territory, I guess, trying to make your way to academia, trying to make your way to graduate school, and you end up learning quite a bit, trying, you know, a little bit here and there.
Well, that leads me to my first question, actually. Could you tell our listeners a bit about when and why you began writing?
I began writing, I guess, full-time, or what you would say, seriously, maybe about 7-8 years ago. I had always written, I guess. I worked as a newspaper reporter for quite a bit, and that's basically how I got my my start as a writer. But creatively, or writing poetry or short stories, didn't happen until afterwards. I think my experience as a reporter has helped my writing, has influenced my own style. But I always felt it was a little bit restricting. The industry itself, I guess, was not headed where I wanted it to go, and I got out of it and started pursuing something more creative, which is how I ended up writing poetry, stories, and maybe eventually a novel, so we'll see.
So could you tell us more about the writing style that you use when you're writing your poetry and short stories?
I would say that the style that most, I guess, best fits my prose is fragmented. I've noticed that over the years. I try to fight it for a little bit. All of my stories or all my prose came out fragmented, and I wasn't quite sure why. And I tried to write a little bit more fluid, a little bit more of a continuous narrative arc, and it just wasn't happening. And I think it just goes with the way that I perceive our mind works, the way that I find we perceive the world, which is in fragments, in bits and pieces. And our minds jump between them. We make connections, sometimes randomly, sometimes a little bit more logically. And that's the way that it comes out on the page.
A little while back, you gave me some advice as I've been trying to work on my own writing. I mostly write academic stuff, but not so much artistic, literary type writing. You mentioned to me that it might be a good idea to emulate favorite writers of mine. Could you give our listeners a little more insight into that type of advice that you might give to beginning writers, to some of your students, folks like that?
Absolutely. I think looking back on how I got started writing, it's pretty simple, I guess, and a little bit, well, I guess it's overly simplistic. You take something that you like, almost like a song or, you know, a poem, and you try to emulate it. You try to copy the style, the voice, They, you know, one of the greatest forms of flattery is when somebody copies what you do, right? And when we first, you know, become enamored with a writer or with a musician, and we're trying to, you know, go into that field ourselves, one of the first things you do is you play like that person. You know, think of a cover song. When you're first learning to play guitar, you learn a cover song and you play that song over and over, that song that you like or that band that you that really impresses you. And I think the same goes for writing, especially as a very young writer, when you're trying to get started and you have no idea what you're writing about, how to write it. Say you pick somebody that you like, that you enjoy, and you try to copy them, I guess, their style, or at least try to do something like they did because they impressed you so much. And for me, when I first started writing poetry, I didn't know that I could even write. And by that, I mean not that I had the, that I did not have the skills, but that I had the permission to write about the things that were in my head. And the first one, poets that I came across was Charles Bukowski. I mean, who hasn't, right? Especially at a very young age. And reading Bukowski's poems just gave me the permission to pretty much write about anything that I wanted to. I mean, just look at his poems. It's about, you know, bars, the racetrack, horses, women, bodily functions, you name it. He took the ordinary and he turned it into something a little bit more extraordinary, something that on the page to a very young writer was very attractive. So that's how I got started. I was trying to emulate Bukowski, just like so many hundreds or thousands of other writers out there. And then slowly but surely, you develop your own voice. You find out that it's not working for you or that you have something more to say. You could say it differently. You could say it better. And that comes through exposure and through reading other writers. There is no other way that it's going to happen if you do not read. So that's how I got started.
That's wonderful advice. So I'm hoping that you could read us one of your poems so our listeners can get a sense of your voice as a writer.
Sure. Let's start with this one. It's called When You're Not Looking For It. There's nothing special about the sky. In fact, it's ugly and bitter as hell. And the clouds keep repeating themselves to make it perfectly clear, rolling over, lunging towards always and never. And we're going along with it for now, but not really headed anywhere, except maybe the occasional sharp turn or the brief pause for a beautiful distraction. The ground is dry and the autumn leaves are on fire, though it's colder than that. And the people are walking about in their striped sweaters and boots. When we pass by the art supply store, I squeeze your hand because the molding clay, the colors in the window are small strokes of nostalgia. The lights from passing cars are a million signals like a million eyelids fluttering in shades of red. The same in the secondhand store, the antique and the confectionery shops. We walk in and out to keep warm, and after an entire day, we have only some chocolate to show for it, which I let you finish all by yourself, except for a small bite, just a taste. By then, the stars are above us, even though we cannot see them. And I reach under your jacket with a cold hand just to feel the curvature of bone. You curve your hips and your waist like glass, like an ornament for the pine trees by the side of the road, smelling of the cold and of the snow that hasn't fallen yet, that might never fall the way we wanted to this year, because some years are like that, filled with the sadness worth revisiting at 27 or 28 or any other lifetime in between. Years when we were something, but it wasn't anything that would move the world, although the light through the curtains made it seem that way at times, and the records that played only for us in a crowded room inside a restaurant, through this open bedroom window where the small fire is already on, and we stop and listen and rub our frozen hands without any snow in sight.
Thank you. That was beautiful. And I think that leads us right into our first musical selection. Our playlist today was curated by Dr. Gurianu. And I think that we're going to start off with Smashing Pumpkins, 1979, a very nice nostalgic tune. And we're back here on Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Sierra, and I'm talking today with poet and author Dr. Andre Gurianu of New York. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We just heard a beautiful poem by Andre, and I wanted to ask you, tell us more about how you get started writing and the process involved in creating a piece like that.
I always like to say that I think in pictures, and I think almost all of us do. We're just not always conscious of the fact that that's the way that we think. So many poems for me are triggered by an image, almost always an image, maybe sometimes a song lyric or two, but it is almost always a picture that I have in my head. Sometimes that picture is something concrete, something that I've noticed along the way as I'm walking somewhere, something that I see on TV, maybe even in sitting down or for, you know, for a dinner at a restaurant, maybe in a bar, museum, what have you. Something that grabs my attention, that sort of steals my eye away from whatever, you know, I'm looking at the time, and it just begs for me to pay attention to it. And that image would be ingrained in my head. Sometimes it triggers a piece of writing almost instantaneously, and sometimes it takes a little while for it to get there. But it starts with an image. And the same thing with this, the poem that I just read. It actually started with an image, and it was walking by the secondhand store. Now, you notice that the secondhand store, though, or at least the mention of the secondhand store, didn't happen until midway through the poem. But that was the germ. That was the seed for the poem. I was walking by a secondhand store in winter when it felt like it should have been snowing, but it wasn't yet. And that's where it started.
And I feel like there are moments like that, opportunities for moments like that all the time in your neck of the woods. I can.
Yeah, I would say so, especially where I am in the Northeast, where I'm staying right now, but especially in New York City, there are tons of opportunities, tons of possibilities. And one thing that I noticed is sometimes an image beckons or begs you to follow it, to do something with it, but it doesn't always pan out. So not all images are created equal. Sometimes they might be a little bit too, they could be cliched, they could be overused, but they can nonetheless feel energetic in that moment. They have that quality about them that makes you pay attention. And one thing that I've realized you need to do is to be very selective about them, especially in a culture and in a place where you are inundated by images and stimuli at all times of the day. You have to be very selective in terms of what you end up putting on the page.
How do you develop that sense of what is page-worthy and what is not?
Again, I think it goes back to just reading a lot and getting an exposure to as much writing as you possibly can in different kinds of writing. If you see that, you know, people are making use of a certain symbol or a certain image over and over and over, chances are that I'm not going to use that symbol or that image, especially not in the same way. That's how cliches, form. That's how things get boring, overused, and mundane. And I don't think you would know that or you would get that sense unless you are exposed to a different kind of writing.
And you don't have to be in New York City to pick up on these things that catch your eye, catch your imagination. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think it happens, or it can happen anywhere in the world, any time of day. It's a matter of staying open to what's around you and processing what is around you. I always like to tell the story of an article that I read in the New York Times, and the problem is I never remember the title of the article or when it came out and who wrote it. But the gist of it was about... and you might actually know a little bit more about this because it deals with psychology quite a bit. And it talked about filters, how many of us have filters sort of in our consciousness as we walk around throughout the day and we process what's going on around us. We filter out what is important to us and what is not, what we should focus on and what we should not. best example of this is, let's say, you wake up in the morning and the first thing you see when you turn on the television is catastrophe, suicide bombing or what have you on television. Most of us will process that very briefly, and then the filter kicks in and kind of suppresses it. Otherwise, if you're thinking about calamity and catastrophe 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, chances are you're not going to function. You know, you're going to be in a state of depression or anger or what have you, throughout the day. So most of us walk around and we have filters. We process and we prioritize things. And this article went on to show and discuss how artists, how the artistic mind, or those who are a little bit more artistic than others, process things differently, especially in terms of how their filters work. Either they do not have any filter whatsoever, or they are able to put those filters on hold as they observe something, as they notice or process what's going on around them. So that instead of just noticing it for, 2 seconds as it, passes on the screen or a sound or, something that you see walking down the street, you actually engage with it. It almost obsessively so. You dwell on it, and you begin to understand it differently. You understand and you process the world around you in a slightly different way than most of the population, according to this article, that filters out their world.
So you're not just letting those little things go. You're grabbing onto them, and you're holding them up and taking a closer look.
Yeah, absolutely. That is why many artists have obsessive personalities. I think that's pretty enough. We all have obsessions, and I think with artists, those obsessions are magnified that much more because of that, because you take something and you scrutinize it. You don't just let go of it.
And that leads really nicely into our next musical selection that you've chosen. That's an old favorite of mine, too, by Jane's Addiction, called Jane Says. And I've always loved the narrative in this song, the story that's being told about just this troubled woman and just a couple of instances in her life that a lot of people might just find fairly mundane.
She starts to cry. She takes
Welcome back to Talking Loud and Drawing a Crowd. Today we're talking with Dr. Andre Grianu of NYU. And Andre, could you tell us more about your current project? I understand you have a book that just came out. Two, actually, right?
Yeah, two, actually. The most recent is a collection of short stories titled Body of Work. And I did not plan to read from that today, but if your listeners are interested, they can go on Amazon and just type in my name and body work, and they should be able to find that short story collection without a problem. The other project that I've been working on for quite some time and finally came to fruition this year is a two-volume collection of poems that were written probably over the past 4 to 5 years or so. And what makes it special for me is that the second volume is a book-length poem, essentially. It's about 32 pages. And it was something that, for me, was very different, at least the process. As I mentioned before, things usually come to me in fragments. At least that is my my prose style and just the way that my mind works. Sort of jumps from element to element, from image to image. And to keep focus on a 32-page poem was definitely a challenge, and I was very happy to finally see this in print. The first volume includes about 30 or so individual poems, and that's what I'm going to read for you in just a little bit. And that volume was also a very was a big departure for me also from the stuff that I usually write. The majority of the poems that I've written to date and the books that have been published almost exclusively deals with the past, with memory, with remembrance, and especially with my childhood in Romania during the 1980s, as well as the transition to during the 90s and afterwards, sort of the immigrant experience. And the way that I would describe these new poems, I wouldn't exactly call them love poems, but almost all of them deal with some kind of a relationship, with some kind of presence in our lives. And talking about obsessions, you know, what else do we obsess over more than love, I think? It's probably the one thing that all of us have in common, some kind of desire to be loved, to find a connection, to reach out to one another. And I would say that this is what this collection does.
Could you share a piece from that collection?
Sure. This one is titled Cocktail Party at Midnight. Beautiful women lean over balconies into the Proustian night. A late summer wind picks at the hems of butterfly dresses that quiver like curtains in an open window. Someone points out that many great speeches have been made from such heights, resulting in canned laughter and practiced applause. But we have no need for politics tonight and this economy of measured words. Inside the hallways of the museum, between the many painted faces, hands propped on hips, the number twos on parade to guarantee survival of the species. You tell yourself that if you were anywhere but here, these are the kinds of people you would love to hate. But let's be honest. Your glass is as bloody as all the others. And who do you think you are, anyway, to question the laws of numbers? The philosophy of wine and chamber music that will linger in your mind long after the night is done. The way a good cigarette and a fine pair of legs cuts grooves in the midnight air.
Oh, thank you. That was wonderful. So I think this is also a good chance for us to insert another one of the songs that you've chosen.
Sure.
Are you feeling more upbeat or a little slower?
Oh, let's go upbeat. Why not?
That sounds good to me. I think Possum Kingdom is a good one by the Toadies from back in Texas where I grew up. How do you like that one?
Perfect. Let's go with it.
All right. We'll be right back after Possum Kingdom here on Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd with Dr. Andre Grianu of NYU.
Make up your mind. Decide to walk with me around the lake tonight, around the lake tonight, by my side. By my side. I'm not gonna lie. I'll not be a gentleman. Behind the boathouse.
And welcome back to Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Sierra. And we're talking today with Dr. Andre Gurianu of NYU. During the song, we were talking about the relationship between poetry and prose, some of the connections, some of the differences. And I was hoping you could give our listeners a look into that conversation that we were having.
Absolutely. Best I can do is tell you what the relationship is for me and how I transition from one to the other. Like I said, one of the first things that I did when I started writing was emulate Bukowski. And if anybody's familiar with his work, you'll know that many of his poems are pretty much glorified prose, I guess, with line breaks. And they all tell stories for the most part. And I think that in poetry, no matter how short the poem is, how lyrical it is important to have at least the seed or the nugget of a story in there, some kind of narrative that readers can follow. We all love stories. We like to know what's going on, what will happen, what has happened. So I think one of the first things you can see in my poems is the sense of a narrative, that something happened or is happening, and you can follow it. There is some kind of connection between the elements of the piece. And when I transitioned to prose, let's say, to writing short stories, I brought that poetic voice with me, the one that I had practiced and tried for many years. So obviously, in my prose, there is a sense of a narrative. There are elements and events that can be connected, despite the fact that much of my prose is fragmented. But I always blend the poetic voice with the narrative. I always am aware of the sound of a line, of the sound of a particular word, and the placement of words on the page. So for me, the two feed off each other. The fact that I started writing poems that had a narrative, that had a story somehow embedded in them, then when I transitioned over to writing stories, I brought the poetic voice over with me. So they very much, like I said, feed each other, and they work nicely off each other for me.
So could you read us another example of this type of work?
Sure. I will read only a very short segment from a short story called Beginnings, which is from that new collection called Bodies of Work. Oh, so this is just one paragraph, essentially, within that story. How to explain the pleasure of talking to a girl on the other side of a fence. The apricots fragrant overhead, the splintered wood rough against your palm pressing closer, and her face jutting in and out of view between the uneven slats, mingling with sunlight, the flower arrangement on the outdoor table, a dress with modest colors. And the conversation, as it should be when it's well past noon and the air is lazy. The animals, too, and even the words fall victim to the heat. She says, "Where were you yesterday?" I say, "I was out in the yard, working," as if it was something new, some big, proud accomplishment. She turns and wrings out the water from a rag and says nothing. She clothespins the rag to a line of electrical wire that runs from the eaves to a tree in the middle of the garden. And the garden is heavy with a bit of everything. And I try to recognize all of the smells, but I can't separate them. They're all one big country smell. And in my head, when I leave heading home, she smells of that same smell. Vegetable sweet, dirt dry, clean as air off the lake. I ask her if she ever goes into town. She says, yes, sometimes. A few days earlier, I learned that her father puts the classical radio station on all day from morning until it is time for bed. She lists some of her favorite composers. A few times, she's been to the city to hear the Philharmonic. I tell her I used to come here to get away from the city. She says nothing, either as if it's obvious or it doesn't matter, or she doesn't care, or all of that, and goes about cutting something up on the table, wiping her forehead with her sleeve. Before I leave, she says her father is going fishing on Saturday. He goes fishing every Saturday.
That was great. And you can really hear the things you were talking about earlier, about thinking in pictures and grasping onto these just little small experiences or things that come up in life and just really digging into them.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's the one thing that easily defines what I do, what I write.
So you've mentioned a couple of pieces of advice that I think are really valuable that I'd like to kind of bring them together and tie them together for our listeners out there who may be just starting at writing. They may have been writing for a while and they're wondering how to progress to the next level, that type of thing. You've mentioned to read widely and get experience with a variety of styles. You've mentioned to be open to your experiences, to your environment, and to grasp onto the things that other people may just let go. You've also mentioned emulating the style of writers who you admire and trying to find your voice through that emulation. What other types of pieces of advice do you have for our listeners out there?
Don't try to make a living off of it. that would be number one. If you're going to write, make sure you love writing and do it for its own sake. Don't expect instant fame or recognition now or ever, because it may not happen. Take pride in the fact that you are writing, that you are perceiving and processing the world around you in words, because without words, we cannot think. That's really the best piece of advice, is that, now I think of it, is when you think you got it, you don't got it. And that's probably one of the biggest things as a writer, is never to feel content with where you're at. I think that's one of the things that has fueled me for ever since I began writing, as I'm almost never happy with where I'm at as a writer, as a thinker, I guess, as a poet or a prose stylist. I'm always trying to discover something new, a new voice, a new style, to try something different. And when you think you got it, and you become content, almost complacent, that is almost sort of the end of your creative career. I think that's one of the things that plagues many young writers. They've, write a few good pieces, maybe they get a little bit of acclaim, and they think they got it. They think they've made it. And probably, like I said, the best piece of advice is not to stop, is to just keep writing, to keep innovating, and to enjoy the success of finishing a piece, to be content, to be happy, praise yourself a little bit, and then move on and try something else. Do not stagnate.
I think that's wonderful advice, no matter what you're trying to write or create for all of the creative endeavors.
I mean, that's more life advice than anything. I don't think that's only applicable to writers or just creative types. I think anybody, once you become too set in your ways, you tend to stagnate. And, we learn throughout our lives. The process is never ending. So in the process of creating, we almost always learn something as well about ourselves, about the world around us. So it's important to keep that in mind, whatever it is that you do.
I think we have time for one more song. And it's actually one of my old favorites as well. You chose a really great playlist, actually, by the way, Andre. This one is by Pearl Jam, and it's called Yellow Ledbetter. And I challenge our listeners to decode the lyrics without Googling it. We'll be back in just a few on Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd with our special guest, Dr. Andre Grianu.
Oh,
said, on our way, yeah. And I called, and I said, and I woke, and I said, and then I called out of here. And the rest of on a leave of compound, oh. I said, I know what I wear, and I'm back to the back. Oh, yeah. And you see them out on the bus, yeah, but they don't wave. I see them bound up and away, yeah. And I know, and I know, I don't want to leave. Maybe cry.
And welcome back to Talking Loud and Drawing a Crowd with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Sierra. We're here today with Dr. Andre Gurianu of New York University. And we're about out of time, so I wanted to wrap things up by giving you an opportunity to tell our listeners about where they can find your books and their titles.
Absolutely. The poetry collection that I read from is called The Museum of Brief Sentiments. And the only place that collection is available right now is through my website, which I'm sure you will let your listeners know about. It's andregurianu.com. And the reason it's only available there is because there's only 100 copies of it. It is a limited edition, signed and numbered collection. So you can find that on my website, andregurianu.com. And the prose collection, the short story collection, is titled Body of Work and Other Stories. And you can find that easily by just typing in my name in Amazon, or just body of work and other stories, and that'll pop up for you. And that book is also available for the Kindle as well.
That's great. Now, for those of you who are wanting to visit Andre's website, it's www.andreiguriau.com. I'll also put a link to his website, both on the Facebook page for Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd. And if you haven't already liked it, it'd be a good idea so you can keep on top of things. Just search on Facebook for KVRF, Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd. I'll also make sure that we have your information for your website and some biographical information on RadioFreePalmer.org.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on Talkin' Loud and Drawin' a Crowd. Next week, join us again for another interview and music with some of the movers and shakers in education, literature, the arts, and the human services, both in and outside of the beautiful Matsu Valley of Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Elizabeth Sierra of University of Alaska Anchorage, saying goodbye, and I'll see you next week.